This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The push towards digitalization has affected postal service organizations around the world, with declining mail volumes and more nimble delivery competitors eating into what was traditionally a monopoly business. The more resilient postal services adapt to changing times before becoming obsolete. Can Post Malaysia join the ranks of the survivors? Today on The Breakfast Grill, we find out the progress of Post Malaysia's attempts to transform the business with its CEO, Charles Brewer. We spoke to you last year when you first came on board, Charles. Welcome back for our one-year catch-up.
Shazana, I am delighted to be back. I listened to that interview from a year ago, you know, and how naive I was, but there you go.
Lots to cover in the little bit of time that we have. In December, you outlined a three-phase transformation plan for Post Malaysia. Beginning with phase one, focusing on bringing the company back into the black.
Yeah.
Post Malaysia recently snapped a loss-making trend in the second quarter of this year, at least in terms of profit before tax. You inked about 172,000 ringgit gain compared to a loss of 122 million ringgit a year ago. That said, some would say this improvement is marginal. Is phase one proving to be more difficult than you anticipated?
A simple version, no. It's been pretty much as we thought it would be. Very, very hard work. I'm super proud of all of the Post Malaysia, we call them Weirers, Post Malaysia Weirers. They've done an outstanding job. And to turn a business from, you know, the numbers you just mentioned, and I want to stress really critically that we had a great Q2 and a significant improvement. And that was an improvement on Q1. But we're not through the woods yet. We've still got a lot of work ahead of us.
You've managed to narrow losses significantly. Looking at the first 6 months of this year, cumulative losses before tax declined by over 80% from last year. And this is despite the declining overall revenue trend on a year-to-year basis. Now, is this improved financial performance purely down to success in reducing costs? And if so, how are you achieving this?
So maybe if I just spend a couple of minutes contextualizing our journey and what we focused on over the last 12 months, both top line and, of course, cost. So as you mentioned right at the start, so we had a three-phased approach to our strategy. The first one was to fix the basics and get back in the black. So in our sort of core part of our business, our service, it just wasn't good enough. And as I said, the primary effort through and primary goal through the first phase was to get the basics right. When you book a package with Post Malaysia, when you send a letter with Post Malaysia, it should get picked up and delivered on time. So that was phase one and getting back to black. And as you mentioned already, fiscally, the output has been very good. So we can put a sort of a semi-tick across that, notwithstanding my earlier comments. But what I'm probably prouder of in some respects is how our team has really fixed the basics. So back in August last year, back when I had that lovely interview and was still fresh and probably a little bit unknowing around some of our challenges, our service level for parcels, our parcel performance for next day delivery was around about 51, 52%, somewhere around there. I got engaged very heavily with the operations team and we worked really, really hard. And I have to say, and I've worked in many, many countries with many different logistics operators, but I've never ever seen an operations team turn it around so fast. And so by Q4, we were already in sort of the 80s and 85s. But as I sit here today, our operational performance for parcel is 95.7%, which is the best in Malaysia, the very best in Malaysia. So
what was causing the operational service to be so low in the past? I guess what obstacles had to be overcome to reach this 95.7% delivery service that you claim?
Yeah, so I mean, no rocket science. I have a great team of analysts and operations who spent the first few weeks really looking at the root cause analysis. Where were we going wrong? And it was really basic. I mean, there were some basic opportunities. So moving it from, you know, as I say, around 51, 52 to the 80s was around just doing what we should be doing. And to give you a couple of examples, so we have two networks, a mail network and a parcel network, which we're very quickly merging, by the way. But to the point, we use our 6,000 plus postal operators, which cover more than 10 million addresses across Malaysia, so we have the broadest reach. So we leverage those postal operators, those postmen, to deliver items below 2 kilos. So we leverage that network to do that. And to your question, when we looked at the infrastructure that was was getting the volume from our parcel operations to our mail operations. It was missing the time that the postmen were going out. So it already added a day straight away. So to be honest with you, no rocket science, pretty much basics, A to B logistics operations.
Okay, so there was a lot of underutilization of what infrastructure network you had, and the idea was really just to coordinate everything so that it all came together.
Yeah, and people talk a lot about sort of technology and operations and technology and logistics. You know, I think, again, for your listeners, it's still a people business. So part of that sort of transformation was really about, you know, a bit of a recognition and an understanding of where we were and a bit of an honest view of where we are and where we want to be. So I would say 50% of it was basics, blocking and tackling, doing what we should be doing from logistics operations, and 50% was just good man management and getting the people engaged. So fundamentally, phase one was just get that service right. And then was cost opportunities. So again, to your question, lots of low-hanging fruits, both in terms of last mile. So to give you an example, our couriers' productivity, so how many parcels they deliver a day, which is a function of cost and a function of capacity, etc. We've improved that by more than 80% over the last 12 months. So that means we're not having to add resources for the incremental parcels or parcels that we have, and we're getting a greater productivity out of our couriers. And again, a lot of that's just good man management, good route design. We also took a difficult decision, but I mentioned it last year that our overhead was too high as an organization. So we were running around 18, 19% of revenue for support costs. Most organizations, good organizations, will run 12, 13, 14. Great, run at 7, 8, or 9. So we've taken about a third of that out very fairly, I hasten to add. So working with our partners, the unions, working with the employees, an MSS and a VSS approach. So with no, touch wood, significant hiccups. And on the revenue side, which is as important, by the way, and you mentioned volumes, you know, there's a very, very good CEO who runs a very, very good and capable logistics operation that quotes the phrase, better, not bigger. Now, I'm not sure I 100% agree, but what she is fundamentally saying is that having more volume but not making money on that volume is no point. And in Post Malaysia's case, we've been very, very, very dependent on very large platforms that doesn't always, and they're great customers, but they don't always generate the margins that we want. So we've been very carefully and correctly refocusing our commercial organization on segments that were underpenetrated but also bring a better yield.
Okay, a lot of points to unpack there in that statement, Charles, but I want to start with the workforce. And
Sure. You've
been very keen to highlight just how important the workforce of Post Malaysia is. When you first joined last year, right-sizing the workforce was seen as a key challenge for you. Given the strength of the postal workers' unions, yeah, I understand there are like some 7 unions in Post Malaysia, how did you persuade them to come on board with the mutual separation scheme and also your broader transformation plans?
A couple of points already to your question. First and foremost, and you mentioned 7 unions, it is quite a number. It's a little bit unusual from my experience, but they're great. I mean, you know, in very honest, and I get asked it very often, in the 12 months I've been here, we've had a very open and honest, I think that's really important as well, an honest relationship. We have an approach called union first. So everything we do, we talk to the unions first. Any plans, any strategies, any tactics, any execution, we talk to the unions first about what we plan to do. And they have far more knowledge about post-Malaysian than I ever will, probably. So their inputs to things that we're going to do, whether it be from the smallest to the biggest, help us to get it right.
And your MSS scheme exercise last year reduced your headcount by some 500 employees. That's brought down your workforce to just under 20,000 people. I think it's around 19,000 plus. But even at that reduced figure, your staff costs as a percentage of revenue still stood at over 40% based on the 2021 annual report figures, which is still pretty high. Are you looking to rationalize staffing further?
It's about 42%. I think I was looking the other day. I thought you might ask that question. It's about 42%. And just a couple of points. So first and foremost, if you look at all postal operators around the world, we're in the sort of lower 15th percentile. So there are 14 or so post offices with a better ratio from cost to revenue, but they're also a lot worse. So Post Malaysia is not doing so bad when you compare to other postal operators. And there are 190 postal operators around the world. So to give you an indication, we're about 15th or 16th. You know, the best in the world is Singapore, but they have a 5 kilometer square geography, so it's not so tough. And as I mentioned earlier on, I think we're all always going to be a fairly people-intensive organization. You know, drones and robotics and other things will come when they come, but it still will be a very people and labor-intensive environment. But okay. to your question, we're constantly, because it is a big part of our costs. I mean, whether we're 15th or wherever we may be, it's still a large part of our cost. And given the challenges we've had and still have to a certain degree, we're always looking for efficiency. But that efficiency, I think, going forward comes in use of technology and other systems, perhaps, as opposed to what we did last year. So different ways. But again, constantly evaluating ways to improve our service, improve our customer experience, and improve our profitability. So everything's on the table as always.
One thing I was curious about, we see last mile delivery courier industry, it's synonymous with gig workers, and many logistic companies hire temporary delivery workers during peak seasons. Yeah. Does this type of gig work feature in Post Malaysia's labor makeup?
Not on the postal side. So on the postal side, we have about 6,000 postmen and one woman, I hasten to add.
Only one?
I know, I'm trying to change it. So if there's anybody listening who is keen to become a postwoman, let me know. I'd be delighted to bring you on board. On the parcel delivery side, we have a mix. So we have about 3,000 gig economy delivery drivers, so arm's length arrangement where we pay a unit price per delivery, and we have just less than 1,000 employed, so a bit of a mix. So we use those, they're called EPs, and they're very good.
Yeah. And how are they remunerated? Do they get medical, SOXO, fuel subsidies? I mean, that's the big debate at the moment, right? How are gig workers being paid?
So presently, we just pay them a parcel rate. So they get a unit rate like all other companies in Malaysia, I hasten to add.
Okay, but no EPF and SOXO?
Not presently, no.
I'm speaking to Charles Brewer, CEO of Post Malaysia. When we come back, what does a level playing field look like from Post Malaysia's perspective? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. Today, I'm speaking to Charles Brewer, CEO of Post Malaysia, for a one-year report card on his tenure at one of Malaysia's most recognizable brands. The conventional mail business is in terminal decline, as we acknowledge, and you are looking to pivot to parcel deliveries to boost revenues. That said, parcel volumes are trending downwards across the industry by some 30% as consumers shift to in-person shopping again, and also encumbered by inflation fears and consumer sentiment. So how much of a boost can the parcel segment contribute to the bottom line, given that the overall pie is shrinking?
Yeah, so a great question. So first and foremost, in terms of the parcel segment, so not just Post Malaysia, but the total parcel segment, parcels per capita has come down about 30-35%. That sort of reduction this year versus last year is a function really of three things. The consumer behaviour has definitely shifted back to retail. And that, I think, most of us would have said that's highly likely. The second thing is that, to your point, I think there was generally a bit of fear from consumers in terms of the economy. So, you know, globally, the markets are a little bit fragile, and Malaysia, I think, is not necessarily significantly different. So I think people are slightly hedging their bets about whether they should spend or not. And the third thing that's sort of impacting the sector is, because you've got that sort of slowing parcel segment, and again, 50% of Malaysia's parcel market is dominated by the two big platforms. Those platforms are able to inject more of their parcels into their own network. So you have Shopee Express, you have Lazada Express. So they're able to inject it into their own network, and they're growing their network. We call it captive logistics, and they're growing. So if you take that the total size of the market was about 75 million parcels a month, roughly, something like 50% of that 75 million comes from those two large platforms, and those large platforms are increasingly leveraging and using their own logistics network. And then you add the other two points I mentioned. That creates a slightly depressed market for people like ourselves and many others besides. So what does that mean? It means that this year is going to be a little bit of a challenge, as I mentioned earlier. So we made great progress with Q2, but still plenty of challenges ahead. But it doesn't change our strategy. Our strategy is fundamentally built around, from a domestic parcel perspective, providing the best service in the market, and customers will come and use you. I would make one other point, which is when we were building our and developing our strategy this time last year, we looked at all other postal operators, particularly the ones that were being more successful. And there's a very common red thread of those ones that are more successful than others. And that is that they are de-risking the reliance on domestic parcels. So for what does that mean? That means doing other activities, accretive value creation, where you create profit pools that aren't just domestic. I don't want to, if I'm here next year, we shouldn't just be talking about domestic. We should be talking about our other SBUs, our aviation sector, our logistics sector, Arno, et cetera, and how they're helping to create future profit pools, and also other activities that we're looking at going into Q4 this year and into next year in terms of other types of services we may provide that de-risk that domestic reliance.
Okay. Post Malaysia sits at this curious junction of being a publicly listed company with the duty to provide value to shareholders, while also being a government-linked entity with the responsibility of providing a public utility, namely postal services. So how much does this latter function hinder your ability to determine the pricing of products and services, especially considering that your competitors don't have the same social responsibility imperatives?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Again, not unique for Post Malaysia, but you have that sort of dual purpose. To your question around sort of regulated products, there's only a few of our products are regulated. So parcels not regulated. So theoretically, we can do what we want to do with our price on parcels. Mail, that's a different story, and certainly on some of the products we offer through our retail counters. But, you know, like you mentioned, they're kind of becoming a smaller part of our organization going forward. So I think critically, it's about how do we leverage what we have to have to manage the universal service obligation. And if I give you just one example of that, you know, we're very fortunate to have more than 650 retail points across Malaysia. And it fits beautifully with our purpose in terms of how we're passionate about connecting Malaysians and businesses. That really is a great example of where we serve the underserved in many, many environments. So that's fantastic. Those retail points are fantastic. But as you would appreciate, we have about 2 million people that come into those retail points every single month, but that number is declining. So people are doing things online, they're doing it on their phone, on their app, and so on and so forth. So the question for us is, how do we satisfy the USO? So we need to be in those markets, but leverage those opportunities. So we're working really, really hard around how we can do that, and how do we provide other products and services through those retail points that connects Malaysians, serves the underserved, but also creates a sustainable fiscal position for us.
Okay, what are you looking at then in terms of how you're diversifying that retail footprint? I see that some other post services globally, they're looking into banking and financial services, for example. Is that something that Post Malaysia is considering?
All things are on the table. You know, like I said, we have about 3.2 million square foot of retail space, which I think probably makes us one of the largest retailers in Malaysia, if not the largest. And that's an opportunity. So again, I shan't get into the detail today, but I'm delighted to come back and tell you a lot more about that in due course.
I want to come back on the question of pricing, because Post Malaysia has been arguing for more regulation of the parcel and courier industry, including pricing mechanisms that would prevent what you term as predatory pricing. My question is, why should the government intervene on this if this will impact competitiveness? Because ultimately, it's the consumers that are going to bear the brunt of higher prices.
Well, it's an interesting question. So, and again, I get asked it very often about, is it fair and is competition good? And again, I've operated my whole life in a very competitive environment. So I'm clearly pro-competition. You know, and critically, fair competition is the answer. In the last 12 months, we've seen a number of foreign courier companies who have entered the market fairly recently or in the last few years, and for want of a better word, price dumping. And that in itself, to your point, may not be the worst thing. But those prices and that strategy is based off of deeply funded VC funds that those companies are backed by. So they have different rules of the game. I have a rule of the game, which is around our people, around our service, around our customer, around our profit. They don't necessarily have a profit equation at the moment. So it's not necessarily a level playing field. That's number one. Number two, I think competition and fair competition goes a bit squiffy if those actions start to impact the market. So if you're lowering the price, those companies only have one choice, which is lower their cost. And so we saw a couple of examples over the last 12 months where, to your question earlier, where they're lowering what they pay their delivery drivers, and quite significantly in some cases. What that means is if you're a driver for one of those companies in Malaysia, you were earning X and you get a 30% reduction. You have three choices. Leave, option one, not a great option for many. Option two is argue, which, given that they don't have a union representation, highly unlikely. And option three is you have to work 30% harder to earn what you were earning before. That creates huge safety risks for those delivery drivers. And I think that's wrong. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is, and if you take very recently the Harry Raya sales that I mentioned earlier were significant. They were huge, actually. Significant volume. But the service in Malaysia, if you went online and looked at Facebook or you went to Twitter or you went to, I think it was in a few newspapers, the service and the customer experience went through the floor because they just haven't got the capacity to handle that volume. And even us, even we were challenged during that period. So if you're not reinvesting because you don't have the money to reinvest, then you have a worse service. So to your point, the consumer gets a worse service. And the third thing is that, you know, and to your point around, isn't it good for the consumer? Well, they don't pass those prices on. So the platforms who are selling don't say, hey, hallelujah, we just got a discounted rate from the courier. We're going to reduce your courier costs because most of them don't include the courier costs in the first place. So I'm not so sure it's very visible to the consumer in the first place. So that's sort of bucket number one. Bucket number two is we have in Malaysia 122 courier licenses. So 122 for 30-odd million people. To give you a sort of a relative and relevant comparison, Thailand has 40 for twice the population. Indonesia has 42 for 4x the number of people. So I just think we have a really crowded competitive space. Mm. And the bottom line is, the outcome of all of this is that it's not sustainable, first and foremost. And secondly, I think you're going to see local courier companies struggle, and that may mean they actually close, which I think eventually won't be good for Malaysians or the industry.
Okay, so you have a lot of different rationales to back up this argument that there should be more regulation or at least more fair regulation in the industry.
If I can, Shazana, sorry. I want to reiterate that we work really, really closely and very healthily with MCMC, who are a regulator, but they're also in a difficult position for exactly the reason you just mentioned. So do they upset the courier industry or do they upset the consumer or do they try and work with both? And they're trying to find a happy ground. So I think we're getting closer to some solutions on that front. And I'm hoping that bottom line is competition is great, but it should be fair and fair for all.
Okay. Yeah. We spoke earlier about Post Malaysia being in the curious position of being publicly listed as well as government linked, which creates challenges in its own right. Post Malaysia is also majority owned by DRB Highcom. It's a giant conglomerate. So in short, you answer to many different stakeholders in what is a very iconic business. Xiaoning asked you this last year when she spoke to you. So I'm following up on the same point. Has your status as an outsider affected how you execute your turnaround plan, given the various paymasters that you respond to?
Yeah, you're referring to being a Matt Saleh, I assume, yeah?
So not just a Matt Saleh, but really someone from outside.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The short version is no, not in the slightest. And again, a little bit like the union question that you asked me earlier, the board, which is a fantastic one, if I'm entirely honest, they're a great board, and DRB have been overly supportive. I think I've only had one no, which I won't share right now what that no was, but I only had one no in the 12 months. That's number one. Number two, the chair of the board, and he's also the GMD for DRB Highcom, is really, really great at giving perhaps somebody who doesn't always have the knowledge and expertise, albeit I've lived in Malaysia a few times, but I don't always understand all the nuances. So he's great at giving me good sort of personal advice around how things may or may not land. But anyway, to your question, no, they've been great. They've been really fantastic.
I just want to clarify, you don't face any interference in implementing the transformation strategy at Post Malaysia?
Yeah, none whatsoever. It's fully supportive. I mean, get questions. I mean, any board asks questions, but no, they've been really, really supportive over the last 12 months.
Let's end the conversation with a look at Post Malaysia's share price, which is currently trading at around 65 sen. You have a price-to-book value of 0.6, which seems indicative of investors' lack of confidence in the long-term sustainability of the company. Furthermore, you haven't been paying dividends. So how will you change investor perceptions that this stock is actually worth adding to a portfolio of assets?
Execute on our plans. I mean, that's the bottom line. Yeah. So we had my first AGM just recently with all the shareholders and lots of questions around when will we turn it around and when will we get back into the black, etc. So again, Q2 I think gives confidence to everybody, whether it be to the board, whether it be to my employees, whether it be to the shareholders, that the plan is working. So we're really, really focused on executing on our strategy, and every single day We just go through the T's and the I's to make sure we're doing what we said we were going to do. And that will lead us, hopefully, to the right end place. We just had our analyst call the other day, and a number of those reports come out, and they rated us as hold. And I think their overall sentiments was still a level of uncertainty. And I think that's fair enough. For all the reasons I just mentioned, we've done fantastic work. And I'm, again, super proud of every single post-Malaysia employee that's worked so hard to get us through over the last 12 months and improve the service and introduce digitalization and all the transformation things that we've been working on the last 12 months, for the most part, you know, really, really well executed. But there are still a lot of challenges, all the things we just talked about, whether it be competitors, whether it be masking, whether it be the economy, whether it be whatever else. So I think their rating of hold is probably quite fair.
All right. Charles, thank you very much for speaking with me today. We look forward to catching up with you to find out more about Post Malaysia's developments.
And I look forward to it too.
I've been speaking to Charles Brewer, CEO of Post Malaysia. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.